Welcome to the Jim K. Ford Sends Nation podcast with former TSN radio host Steve Warren and the coach Greg Kennedy.
Coming up on today's show, Matt Murray is now a Belleville Senator. Brady barks over Brendan's biting. The Sens have now lost 11 of 12. Reinforcements are on the way as Batherson returns, and the Sens acquire the 2018 Hobie Baker winner, and the Habs completely blow up their front office. That and much more coming up today on the Jim K. Ford Sens Nation podcast. It is Steve Warren along with Coach Greg Kennedy. How are things, Greg?
Things are good, Steve. There's no insects in my morning Pepsi here. The weather is nice. My voice is okay, I think. My hair is all right.
And, well, that's and important.
There's no glitches. And no glitches yet either. Everything's good. How are you doing?
Everything is fine in these parts. Yeah, I did have a ladybug in my coffee, which was the most Monday thing ever. But we are off and running, and we got lots to sink our teeth into today. And that's a segue. As we head back to Saturday night.
Hands it off for Kaliev. Beats it up high. Anderson across for Edler. Bolt scores! Artur
Kaliev! I'm about done with the train whistle, by the way. If that just disappeared from the NHL, I'd be all right with that.
But that remember when there was only a few things? Like you had the Chicago, the horn in Chicago, and Nobody really had anything else.
It's true, and it became a big thing, and I'm about done with it. I'm done with train whistles, and that includes the one, or train horns, and that includes the one in Ottawa. But that was Sportsnet with the call Saturday night. Artur Kaliev with a winning goal. Kings beat the Senators 4-2. And as an aside, maybe go back and watch that goal, because I think it's a great example of the Sens ongoing confused D-zone coverage. If you watch it, the Kings, this wasn't the Soviet Red Army seeing them for the first time flying around in the offensive zone. Like, the Kings put it back to the point and made a DDD pass. That's it. That's all it took to set up the easiest goal they'll ever get. Their lefty is wide open, passing lane wide open. Four Senators moved out like zombies to, I think it was Edler out on the lefty, and Kaliev is wide open backdoor. And really, Greg, it really is hard when you think about it for the Kings to get so wide open, to be so unnoticeable, wearing the loudest, ugliest helmets in NHL history. I mean, why can't they fix this D-zone coverage, Greg?
Wait a minute. First, those helmets are absolutely brutal. You are correct. That's a penalty unto itself right there. But I'm starting to think now, they're like, pretty soon we got to start blaming the coach, don't we? Somebody's got to step up and say, you know what, this guy, this system or his ability to teach is broken. There's a problem there. And unfortunately, it looks like it falls on DJ. Like, it's just, you had enough time now. The guys should be able to execute by now, and it's just not happening.
And it's not rocket science, because I mean, when you think about it, as long as you're a decent skater, and you've ascended to the greatest league in the world, it's not like it requires the kind of skill that one needs on offense. D-zone coverage is read and react. It's stand where you're supposed to stand, all of those things.
But you're absolutely right. It doesn't take an excessive amount of skill to play without the puck. It takes a brain, and it takes a heart and some dedication. That's it. You just got to have some work ethic and a good attitude and understand the system and be able to read and react. So why they can't do this, I don't get it. They give up the most prime scoring area scoring chances of any team in the league. They give up ridiculously, like this one we're talking about, wide open guys all the time, like seam passes, cross ice passes. Like, people just aren't in the right spots. It's you go and play. If there's a problem that requires your attention in your area, you go play that area. But after you're done there, it's a straight line stops and starts back to where you were, because you need to be in passing lanes when you're not necessarily defending within your area. And that's the other one that drives me up the walls. The number of times that guys just don't get back to where they need to be. You'll never accidentally intercept a pass with your stick in the air or if you're standing in the wrong spot.
It seems to me you lose trust too. You have two kinds of guys when the D zone is not going very well. You have the guys who aren't who are roving and doing their own thing. And then you've got the other guys who are trying to do the right thing, but they've lost trust in teammates. And so it becomes a big schmozzle after that, I think. And even the best players in D-zone coverage start lurching at a position because they don't trust that their teammates are going to be where they're supposed to be.
But if it's gotten to a point where I don't trust player A to be where he's supposed to be, that to me also partially falls on the coach, because the reason I don't trust player A to do his job is that player A does his job so poorly that even I as a player am aware of this. Like, surely to God, the coaching staff is aware that player A can't do his job. Oh, look, player B can't trust player A. Oh, my God, we better fix player A. Do something about player A then to increase everyone else's trust level in that player. Either he doesn't play or he needs a good talking to and a good video session and continually teach until he gets it straight.
So the Sens go 0-4 on that road trip. They've lost 11 of 12. They're now dead last in the NHL. However you want to look at it too, by the way, not just in a points situation, we're talking winning percentage as well. They're last place overall, which is weird, Greg, because the rebuild has been apparently over for 3 months now.
For us, I think the rebuild is over. I don't want to hear the word anymore.
Pierre Dorion would probably like to roll back those comments, but it's dead horse time, but because we've talked about it in previous episodes, but everything that seems to go, that can go wrong for this team has gone wrong. Before we get away from the LA game, we probably should talk about the most memorable moment in that game. When this season is all in the rearview mirror, nobody will forget what happened on Saturday night, where at the end of the game, near the end of the game, Brady Tkachuk and Brendan Lemieux totally get into it. It all started because one of the LA King players, some fourth liner, he goes in and snows Filip Gustavsson, the goaltender. And Brady Tkachuk, and Artem Zub, for that matter, came over and they wanted to have words with the guy. Well, at that stage of the game, Brendan Lemieux enters the fray, really wrenches Brady Tkachuk's neck from behind. And then it was on, of course. Brendan Lemieux, Claude Lemieux's son, doing what he does. And they get into a big skirmish, rolling around on the ice. And it is Brady Tkachuk's assertion that Brendan Lemieux bit him not once but twice on the hand. What was your reaction to that whole mess on Saturday night?
Shock, obviously. This is not something that regularly happens in the National Hockey League. There's a biting incident about once every 5 or 6 years, isn't there? Just crazy. I'm wondering, is there an underlying thing there between Lemieux and Tkachuk? I know I read something, guys are trying to stir up something about how the dads didn't like each other and fought a couple times. But that's just, I agree with Brady's comments. That's no class. That's just Bush League. Okay, if I'm in the middle of a bottom of a scrum and there's all kinds of people on top of me and I can't breathe and your hand is over my mouth, then okay, I'm going to bite you. But this was just totally uncalled for, unnecessary, and like just classless.
Tkachuk was absolutely outraged. You can see how upset he was right after they finally break them up. And it was really badly done, by the way. They only had one linesman on that because I guess there was a skirmish going on somewhere else where another linesman was in there. So it was this weird, twisted mess with Lemieux, Tkachuk, and the linesman. You could see how upset Tkachuk was right away. He effing bit me. He made sure that everybody knew that he had gotten a bit on the play. And it was chirping in the penalty box area. But man, Tkachuk really let go after the game was over.
I think it was the most gutless thing somebody could ever do. Not even children bite. This guy is just, you can ask any one of his teammates, nobody wants to play with him. This guy is a bad guy, bad teammate, focus on himself all the time. Just the guy's a joke. He shouldn't fucking be in this league. This guy's gutless. I know no other team wants him. He's going to keep begging to be in the NHL, but no team's going to want him. This guy's just an absolute joke and just a bad guy. And it's just, it's gutless, but I can't really wrap my head around it. Children don't even do this. This guy's just a bad guy and not even a good player either. He decides I don't even know what he's thinking. He's just a complete brickhead. He's got nothing up there. Bad guy, bad player, but what a joke he is. So it's a couple more years of, I don't even think it's a couple more years. It's ticking for him. Nobody wants him.
How do you really feel, Brady? Holy moly, did he let loose? I mean, Jonathan Quick has now come to the defense of Brendan Lemieux for everything that Brady Tkachuk said there. He's basically, he was saying that everybody here would rather have Brendan Lemieux as a teammate than Brady Tkachuk as a teammate, and called Tkachuk's statements garbage. That's if you like the post-game fodder, that's about as good as it gets, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. It makes you wonder, like, where does Brady get his information? You don't just throw something out like that without knowing something. He's got buddies on the team, or he's got buddies that have played with Lemieux before. He knows something. And Jonathan Quick coming to his defense. Okay, let's see how the rest of the team reacts. Let's see how the executive reacts in L.A. If Brendan Lemieux was suddenly shuffled off within the next couple of weeks, or sent down, or sat out, health bomb, whatever, just keep an eye on this situation. I'm interested to see how the rest of Brendan Lemieux's career pans out over the course of the next month or two.
Yeah, this is the quote from Jonathan Quick, by the way. I've got it in front of me now. I have my own opinion about what happened or did not happen last night. And what I can tell you is any comments that were made about Pep were garbage. I guess he's inherited his dad's nickname. Claude Lemieux's old nickname from his NHL days was Pepe Lemieux, because he was a bit of a skunk out there, the way he played the game. He's a valuable player, Quick continues, who sticks up for his teammates. We all support him, and I'd rather have him on my team over that kid, being Tkachuk, any day of the week. At this stage of the game, it's really hard. If I'm in the Department of Player Safety, like, I watch that video, I don't know what I'm doing with it. Like, I guess the officials must have some sort of conclusive proof by looking at Brady Kachuk's hand when he was in the penalty box and maybe seeing teeth marks or something. But as an outsider just watching the video, it's really difficult to say that for sure Brady Tkachuk was actually bitten on the play.
Yeah, there's no conclusive Brad Marchand licked me video evidence of this one. You need Gil Grissom and the CSI crew in there checking for, get their swabs out and their flashlights and find some DNA embedded in Brady's hand somehow. But the rest, they did look at it, right? They did look at Brady's hands and did make a call. So despite a lack of video evidence, they did make a call. So they must have been satisfied with what they saw looking at Brady's hand.
Yeah, and I'm confident that a bite or two bites did in fact occur, just to see Tkachuk's reaction. You don't normally react like that if nothing has ever happened. If so, Brady Tkachuk is the greatest actor the NHL has ever known. But, I mean, the Kings do have a leg to stand on here, because unless there's actually, you know, some kind of forensics you do, like you said, it's hard to know for sure. And you will notice, if you watch the video, the very hand that was bleeding, I think it was the right hand, that was the exact one I noticed where he was pummeling kind of bongo style Lemieux in the side of the helmet. He was only getting helmet and visor, and that's an easy way to cut your hand. Not saying that's what happened, but I'm just saying that's the kind of thing the Kings will throw out there.
Well, we'll see what comes out of the, he's got an in-person, he was offered the in-person meeting, right? So that means there's, as soon as somebody's offered an in-person meeting, that means there will be a suspension. It's just a matter of how much, and it's his option to fly to New York for that meeting or not. We'll probably have something within the next 24 to 48 hours.
It was kind of funny. You just heard Brady Tkachuk's rant about Brendan Lemieux. Somebody along the way decided to, I don't know if you're aware of this Cameo thing where celebrities are paid by the average person $50, $100, $1,000 to do a personal video greeting. Somebody took the dialogue, I think it was from the Ottawa Sun, of Tkachuk's comments, and they said they'd like to hear Gilbert Gottfried, the old comedian, they'd like to hear him narrate the Tkachuk comments, and this is what it sounded like.
Tkachuk was furious. This is the one time I'm going to answer this, said Tkachuk. It was the most gutless thing somebody could ever do. This guy, you can ask any one of his own teammates, nobody ever wants to play with him. This guy is a bad guy and a bad teammate. He focuses on himself all the time. The guy's just a joke. He shouldn't be in the league. The guy's gutless.
Yeah. All right, don't forget that the show, the Sens Nation podcast, is brought to you by Jim K. Ford. Are you worried your vehicle may not make it through another winter? Then drop into Jim K. Ford, your Ottawa certified pre-owned Ford dealer. They remove all the worries with a 12-month, 20,000-kilometer limited warranty coverage, vehicle history report, purchase financing rates from 1.99%, 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. Now that's peace of mind. Check out jimkford.com. They're located at 1438 Uville Drive in Orleans. Let's get on to the other big story of the day for the Ottawa Senators, and that would be Matt Murray being placed on waivers. I think that's the biggest surprise right there, that he cleared waivers. We all expected that. That he's been sent to Belleville, that would be the next step. But what was your thought on Matt Murray being placed on waivers by the Ottawa Senators?
My first thought was, what took you so long? He's been going downhill for so long. What took you this much time? What was it that finally sent you over the top? And I got to believe that at some point, DJ, his messaging finally got through to the two Pierres, because I'm sure he's been on this probably from day one. The guy's not good enough. The guy can't play. The guy can't stop beach ball. The guy's not helping us. He's costing us games, yada, yada. I'm sure he's had that conversation with his bosses since the start of the year. And I guess finally the boys upstairs decided, yeah, okay, we're going to do this.
It's amazing. Like, this is the sixth highest paid player or goalie in the entire NHL. And 33 games after signing his contract, he's now an American Hockey Leaguer for the foreseeable future. I mean, he's got a lot of work to do here. And so it's all, I mean, I was surprised they made the move. I didn't think they'd, I think it's the right move. I do. But the problem, if you're Pierre Dorion and that management group, it really shines a spotlight now on that signing. It's an admission that, you know what, we've made a mistake here. Because, by the way, he had to clear waivers. Every team in the NHL had to look at that and go, no interest in that. So that signing is not of interest to anybody in the entire NHL, because, of course, they'd have to absorb the deal that Pierre Dorion signed. And so I was a little surprised from that perspective, because I thought, you know, they would go a little longer and try and figure things out. But yeah, I mean, it seems like somebody finally had had enough, whether it is the owner, whether it is the head coach, the circumstances, the optics don't seem to matter anymore. And he is headed for the American Hockey League. And the problem there is he's now going to be taking up development time from guys like Mad Sogard, who, by the way, is playing very, very well down in Belleville. So you can't really wait on Matt Murray too long. If he establishes he's never going to get back to being a number one in the NHL, then he can't be taking up much development time.
Yeah, he now blocks the development of Sogard, which is terrible, especially when the messaging seems to be he's going to go down there and he's going to play and try to find his game. Okay, then that definitely says, in other words, we're going to send him down there and block Matt Sogard. Like, that's clear as day. They're not going to be playing one and one down there. It's going to be, I think Matt Murray's probably going to play, he'll probably play 3-4 in a row to get going. But then again, with his injuries, he probably doesn't get to play that many because he'll get hurt. But it's not, it cannot be a long-term answer. How about that? You cannot leave him down there beyond 2-3 weeks of him, especially if he's going to be playing every game or the good majority of the game. This cannot go on for long. The next shoe has to drop. There needs to be another move made here. And whether that's a buyout or that's a suck somebody into taking him, or it's a dump him off where everybody sends their bad contracts and he's off to Arizona, something's got to give, and it's got to happen soon.
What happens now? Does Forsberg have a chance to claim the number one role? Because the reaction after they put Matt Murray on waivers, everybody's reaction was, well, Gustafsson starts tonight. I know it was a back-to-back and everything, but I think everybody thought Gustafsson would start the next game and maybe even the next one too. Immediately they go to Forsberg, which made me think maybe DJ Smith still thinks that this is a close battle for number one.
Well, two things on that. Number one, I believe it'll probably be a win and you're in. I don't think they will anoint one of them number one and one of them. I think it'll just be you're going to play. And if you play well, not necessarily win and you're in, but if you play well, you keep your net. The second thing is, and you didn't mention this, but your tweet about, okay, you're an Ottawa Senator. They've just finally admitted that Matt Murray's not good enough and they scratch him for that one game and then come back and give Forsberg the start. What kind of message does that send to the rest of the players in the room? Like if I'm a veteran sitting around there, oh, hey, look, they finally figured it out. Matt Murray sucks. Oh, wait a minute. Forsberg? So I thought that was an interesting take by you there a couple nights ago.
It would just discourage me.
Yeah.
Because I'm absolutely certain that everybody on that bench is thinking, okay, that guy is giving us the best chance to win. Like the level of goaltending, and there were still some people pushing back anytime I made reference to Matt Murray and his struggles, and people would say, you don't know what you're talking about. It's just the team in front of him is not playing well. It's like, no, it's more than that. I mean, Forsberg is badly outplaying him, and Gustafsson is even better than that. So it's been frustrating. And if I'm a player, I'm seeing that. And we've talked about it in previous episodes. Like, it's pretty clear, just to reset, that some teams, I mean, not some teams, I think every team plays better. There's more swagger, there's more confidence on that bench when they know the goaltender's got his you-know-what together and he has their back.
Yeah, and to me, Forsberg doesn't instill that in anyone either. With Gustafsson in net, they do seem to play a little better in front of Gustafsson. Whether that's, let's work hard for the kid tonight, boys. Don't leave him out on his own or whatever. Whatever the reason is, I don't care. If the team's playing better, then yeah, let's try to duplicate that. And if the team's playing better when this, and this happen, then every night we should be trying to make sure that this, and this happen. And one of those this, and this is Gustafsson's in net. And when he's in net, they generate more. They're better defensively. They give up less. A long list of things happen when Gustafsson's in net. Therefore, play the guy.
And there's this thought that Forsberg has this, more experienced veteran guy. Like, he's a little older, but it should be pointed out that although Gustafsson, is a bit of a newbie, so is Forsberg. Like, they're only about 40 career games played apart. So there's nothing to say where Forsberg's kind of, that seasoned veteran, just not true. So I don't think it should be an open battle. I think Gustafsson has earned the right to be the number one. And I do believe the team generally plays better in front of that guy. Now, you get some breaks in L.A. God, I don't know. Was there about 5 goalposts by the Kings in that hockey game? But that's good, too, because the better goaltenders seem that luck seems to follow them around, doesn't it?
Yeah, but also if you're in the right place, there's not a lot to shoot at. guys are going to hit posts. But back to your Forsberg point there, other than maybe on his draft day and in his first couple of months as a professional goaltender, he has never really been looked upon as a starter or as a future starter or as a guy we're going to groom and grow into being a starter. He's basically, since probably halfway through his first season, he's a backup. So you've been grooming Gustafsson as a starter for how long? Both Pittsburgh were and now Ottawa. So make him the starter, give him the games. I've never been a Forsberg fan. I guess I should preface everything with that. But Gustafsson's your guy. That's it. He's now, and that should be a statement that comes out from DJ. I look forward to hearing him say that. Look right in the camera and say, yep, Gus is my guy from now on, and make it happen.
Yeah, I think the next goaltending battle should be Sogard versus Gustafsson, but that's a tale and a conversation for another day. So Matt Murray gets waived, and he's heading to the Belleville Senators. Do you think he'll find his game? What's your optimism level that he does?
How many times, seriously, how many times have we said, this looks good. He's getting better. This is going to get better. Nothing's ever changed. The bottom line is, he looked good briefly here and there. Okay, so that's what he is now. He's a guy who looks good every once in a while and looks terrible the rest of the time. Bad glove hand, slow in his net, injury prone now, sickness prone. Confidence problems. I think he's probably got some sports psychology type problems. And now I'm sure he's dealing with confidence issues as well now too. So, he's there. How you're going to get rid of him, I made a joke about it earlier. Arizona's where you send bad contracts. Arizona's got lots of draft picks sitting there in their future, but you don't trade a contract like that and get something good. You trade a contract like that and give up something half decent as a sweetener so that they will take the contract. And with Arizona probably looking at moving Kessel by the trade deadline, that's a lot of money off their cap. that Arizona is probably the right place. They can simply replace the dollars. It's a couple million less, but you can replace the dollars that get chopped out of your cap when you move Kessel with the dollars you're going to pay to Matt Murray. But you're not getting anything decent out of there.
The one reason I think that there's maybe still a chance that he can figure things out is the first time he's ever gone down to the minors. Like all the analytics people were saying when this deal went down, when the Sens acquired this guy, that this guy has been going sideways for a couple of years. You talk to any Pittsburgh beat writer, they will tell you that Matt Murray has indeed been regressing for a while now. So what has not happened, he's had competition from in Pittsburgh, Tristan Jarry. He's had competition here in Ottawa from both Gustafson and Forsberg. That hasn't been enough to turn him around. This is the first time he's going down to the minors. So maybe, just maybe, there's a way that he finds his game down there. I'm not optimistic, but the guy's been, I mean, there was lots of talk about he's not been the same goalie since the passing of his dad. You think about what that team in Pittsburgh was. They were a championship team. They could insulate any goalie, and maybe as the team faded, you know, they just didn't have that championship pedigree the last year and a half that Murray was there. That can change things as well. I'm not optimistic that he'll get it going down in Belleville, but I'm not going to necessarily write it off because it's just something different. And maybe he finds a confidence and a swagger with everything kind of slowed down the way it is down at the lower level. Stranger things have happened is my point.
It just made me think of something there. And you were talking about him playing in Pittsburgh and they could insulate him. Pittsburgh turned some things around before those two cups when they made a change on their bench as to who was running their D-zone coverage. And if I'm not mistaken, the guy that was running the D-zone coverage there in Pittsburgh, who was lauded by everyone, the players, the fans, the media, for the job he did in working with that D, I'm pretty sure that guy's unemployed right now.
Yeah, and he's available. Yeah, and he's got some experience here in Ottawa.
Yeah.
I think whether Jacques Martin or someone who has the same message and communication and ability to instill some kind of D-zone system set up, that's kind of what the Sens do in fact need at this stage of the game, even if it's someone they bring in as a consultant. Because, of course, the organization is so big on extra expenditures and bringing people in that... Now, before we get away from that Kings game too far, I wanted to go back with DJ Smith, and we had talked about the D-zone coverage and wondering why maybe they're not trying something new or communicate in a different way. We certainly know that he's trying different things, in that we saw it with that game against LA with complete throwing of the forward lines into the blender. First, Tim Stützle last week got an opportunity to start starting at center. And then there was just no rhyme or reason to the lines that he threw out there. I mean, I shouldn't say that. I mean, he probably put a lot of thought into it, but it's so different than what he's been doing. For example, the top line was Tim Stützle at center between Brady Tkachuk and Connor Brown. Like, whoa, that's a bit of a departure. Then Josh Norris was in between Nick Paul on the left wing and Tyler Ennis on the right wing. Mm-hmm. So that was your pseudo top six for that game against LA. So is that a panic move? Is that something that needs to be done, in your opinion? What did you think?
Well, it was strange. My first thought was it was out of frustration, but I'd like to believe that at the National Hockey League level, a professional coach doesn't start jerking his lines around out of frustration. But that was my take, was like, you know, I've had enough. Let's just try this. And you sat there, you get out your little 3x5 cards, you write everybody's name, and then you start pinning them up on the board in different combinations till you find one that you like. I wasn't terribly disappointed in Stützle's performance at center ice. So, okay, you give him another game at center ice. I'm disappointed when I see him not playing with offensive guys enough. There's got to be a way to get him to play with offensive guys. So now he's not going to take Tkachuk's spot, and play on that with Norris and Batherson. But maybe you can find a pairing there. Norris and Tkachuk work well together. Why can't Stützle be with Batherson? Obviously, Brown and Paul as a pair. You know, if you can do that, you've got a hope there. I think there's a chance there. Now, then there's less moving around as you try to figure out which guys sort of complement each pair.
I'm not really second guessing it because I'd be interested. I've been preaching mad science for a while now.
Yeah, that's true.
If I am second guessing something, it's what happened at the end of that Sens Kings game. Because of the biting incident that we talked about, Lemieux got a match penalty near the end of the game. And so the Sens had a full 5-minute power play, which I think rolled up to about, I don't know, the final minute. Right. So it was about 6 minutes to go. And then the thing would expire, the 5-minute major and the power play would expire with about a minute left in the game. The Sens are down by a goal at this point. How in the world? First, there's two things that I second guess DJ Smith for. You're down a goal with 3 minutes left and you've got a power play going 5-on-4. And you've got Delzato, Gambrell at center and Chris Tierney out there. I mean, how can that possibly enter into the second power play unit equation?
Choice of personnel. Timeout works. I mean, now I'm at a completely different level, Stevie. I'll preface everything with that. But I had a 5-minute major power play earlier this season, and I chose five guys, and I put them on the ice. And about halfway through it, I called a timeout and kept them on the ice. They right. basically played the whole 5 minutes. And it doesn't smack of desperation to me. It's something intelligent. Look, I don't have a lot of talent at my disposal. These are certain players I know that can execute. So they should be on the ice. Like that's a no brainer. And use a timeout if you have to. You stall for time if you have to. You figure something out. Let those five guys stay on the ice. Like, yeah, the personnel decision there was very strange.
Now to part two. Yeah. Why would you not have pulled the goalie there when you have full control in the offensive zone on the power play with, I don't know, 3-4 minutes left in that game? And again, it went right up to the final minute. Like, why not go to 6-on-4 when you can?
Yeah, I understand your thoughts there as well. As I was saying earlier, if you have a strong power play, then let's give them an opportunity to score a goal. Right, give them an opportunity to do it at 5-on-4, and not have to expose ourselves to the potential empty net goal. So I understand that, but the power play is not that strong, and has not been that successful, and wasn't particularly successful on this road trip. So yeah, why didn't we pull the goalie again after possession is established and we're in the zone? Because one of their biggest problems is entries on the power play, but after they're in the zone and they're set up. Why not? What? So what if they score an empty netter at that point? And even if they do, like, you're still on a 5-minute major, like, you're still on the power play. Even if they do score an empty netter, you're still on the power play. So right. Go back and get a power play goal.
They did do something positive, in my opinion. Let's see what you think of it. They claimed Adam Gaudette off waivers from Chicago. He's a right shot centerman, and he is a guy. And this is a feeling I have. He's a Hobie Baker winner from 2018. If you're in last place in the NHL and a guy who won the Hobie Baker just three years ago is available and he's available for free, don't you pretty much have to kick the tires on that?
Oh, of course. Yeah. No brainer is the exact right phrase. As soon as I read he was on waivers, oh, well, there the Sens will grab him. It's not going to be a big help. He's not going to step in and start racking up points. Let's face it, Chicago's a bottom five or bottom six team in the league, and he's not good enough to play there. So that's got to tell you something. But still, he's probably an upgrade on some of the options the Senators have in the bottom six of their lineup, particularly at center ice. What's he going to bring? Who knows? Does he need a change of scenery and he'll find himself? That would be nice if he could somehow or other contribute some decent minutes and maybe bring some offense. That would be great. But the bottom line is he's not exactly that top two centerman that we were promised by the owner however many months ago it was now. He's not what you told us you were going to deliver.
To make room, you got Logan Shaw, who goes on waivers, and you also had Parker Kelly, who was sent down to the minors. I think we've all had moments where we admire Parker Kelly, but it's one of those deals, and we see players like that all the time at every level. There's activity, noticeable activity versus noticeable accomplishment. And the more I watch Parker Kelly, I think accomplishment is lacking. It's just, I notice him. He's out there trying hard. He's this team's Rudy. But at the end of the day, if you got a guy like Gaudette who can roll in and upgrade your forward core, then that's an easy move to do what you have to clear things out. And I just don't think Parker Kelly is necessarily ready yet for the NHL. What do you think?
Yeah, no, you're right. He's never going to put up any particularly gaudy numbers that are going to help him stand out. He's a bottom six guy. He's a bottom three guy, Parker Kelly. So that's his future in this league, is to muck and grind and be a presence and kill some penalties and be there in that role. But Gaudette should be an upgrade, and we'll find out soon enough.
So in the meantime, we got Gaudette starting. He's going to play for the Sens against the Canucks on Wednesday night. And, of course, Drake Batherson is back in the lineup. His absence was noted for sure in that Anaheim game. Like, the Sens had so many chances in that game. It's not exactly a hot take to say that they're going to welcome their top scorer back into the lineup with open arms, is it?
Yeah. They're very, very happy to have him back. Now let's see who he's going to play with. Let's see what DJ's blender spits out for that one.
Well, so when I think about Sens and Canucks, it's kind of, what will I call it? Canadian team turmoil bowl or something along those lines. The Montreal Canadiens were part of that mix as well, in terms of, you know, hot seat, team underachieving, fans upset, media upset, and the Habs finally pulled the trigger on Marc Bergevin and his career in Montreal. Bergevin fired yesterday, along with Trevor Timmins. What's the other guy's name? Paul Wilson, I think. They've been fired finally. And they bring in Jeff Gorton, the former New York Rangers general manager, and Matthew Darche, who is in Tampa Bay's organization in their front office. He's been part of two cup winners. He's been learning on the job there. He is far and away the front runner to take over as Montreal's GM. What do you think about Bergevin finally being let go by the Habs on the weekend?
Well, I think it was only a matter of time. Like, let's face it, last year's playoff run saved his job. Otherwise, he would not have been back this year, I don't think. And then the fact that he does come back and doesn't get an extension. He's a lame duck GM. It's standard practice. You get to a certain point where, all right, we're either going to sign him because we have confidence in him that he's the guy to carry us through this, or, you know what? We've got to get somebody else in here now with a different plan who can attack the second half of this season and the trade deadline and upcoming free agency. You need to have somebody in there with a plan, and the new guy with the new plan needs to come in sooner rather than later. So it was only a matter of time all along. It's only been a matter of time. Their drafting history has not been strong. I don't know that they've ever properly address their lack of size and strength. Maybe for a little bit last year, they were a little different. Their blue line is definitely bigger, but up front, their forwards they've never gotten bigger or stronger up front. And that was the problem when he arrived. It's still a problem now. So yeah, it was only a matter of time and he's gone. It'd be interesting to see who they hire. Jeff Gorton's he doesn't even speak French that I'm aware of. He might even be American, for crying out loud. So that's a message, I guess. And I believe Scott Mellenby walked, right? He quit. He was assistant GM. He said, nope, thanks. They didn't fire him, but he quit. So where they go from here, the problem with the Montreal market is, in my opinion, they limit themselves right off the bat as to who they'll hire, because there's so much into the got to be bilingual. So that puts a limit right off the bat on who you can hire. So it's Matthew Darche, I guess it is. Who knows?
Yeah, and Jeff Gorton is now pronouncing his surname Gorton. Just for the record.
Okay. Isn't that a fish food? Don't they make frozen fish?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I believe so.
I would say this, kind of to wrap up the show today, in that I believe the NHL is a very small community. And to see what Montreal did here, and I know this, the thought that some people have, you included, that their run to the cup final last year was an anomaly. But at the same time, it was a run to the cup final. And 23 games after they did that, they fire their GM and they clean house. Meanwhile, you compare it to the Ottawa Senators, they're over 300 games removed from their last playoff appearance. And we got, by the way, 64 more this year. Like, here we are. It feels like we're playing out the string starting in November. Like, fire up the draft lottery simulator in November? Draft previews in November?
So, go wrong for right.
Yeah. I heard shite for right on the weekend.
No,
I thought
go
that was
wrong.
Pretty
good. That's not bad.
I thought that was pretty good. Anyway, I, because the NHL community is a small one, this is an arch rival. They've more recently had success than the Sens have. I wonder if that, in Eugene Melnick's mind somewhere, combined with this recent acceptance of what a monumental error the Matt Murray signing was, I wonder if this isn't getting, even though they've both been extended, DJ Smith and Pierre Dorion, I wonder if maybe Eugene Melnick is thinking about things today and starting to wonder if he should too make a change.
Yeah, that would spur you. That would make you give your head a shake. It's interesting that Canadian division, it's feast or famine, right? You've got like three of them are in the top seven or eight in the league, and then you've got three of them in Vancouver and Ottawa, Montreal, just struggling. And it's this whole idea of an extension, right? Like, you just gave extensions to both DJ and Pierre Dorion. Vancouver just gave an extension to Travis Green. Montreal doesn't give the extension, and they fire their guy. So it's like, by giving the extension, you've made a statement, you've made a decision, you've made a financial commitment to turn around now and fire him. It's kind of like an ownership version of, we gave Matt Murray all this money as a free agent goalie, what do we do now? So there's a question there for Eugene. And it wouldn't surprise me if he did it. It wouldn't surprise anyone if there was a massive house cleaning here in Ottawa. It's just not his way of doing business, though. So I doubt it's going to happen.
Right. Let's leave the good folks with something positive. Is, you know?
Okay.
Is there? No, I don't know what it is yet. I'm hoping you've got something. Is there anything?
I found the Gorton's fisherman. I Googled them.
Okay.
Yeah. He looks like the old Islander fisherman on the jersey.
Wouldn't that be something? I hope he gets a job with the Islanders and brings back the Captain Highliner jerseys.
You want something positive? Well, it's positive that they're playing Vancouver, and Vancouver is struggling, so there could be 2 points there. It's positive that the Drake is back. How's that?
And I think it's not as bad as it seems.
Oh, yes, it is. No, it is. Come on.
No, it's not. Because we knew, like, if I pull 100 Sens fans based on the circumstances of going on this Western road trip, I'd say about 99 of them would say, yeah, they're going to go 0-4, probably, based on the COVID thing and the injury factor and all that. And they basically did on this road trip what a lot of people expected them to. And it's not great, granted, but I don't think it's as bad as we're thinking. It's bad. Not as bad as we're thinking. Oh, so I think you're going to see a spike, just as they had a spike last year. Once the games stop becoming meaningful, they get comfortable again. And I don't believe they're as bad as they're showing right now.
All right. Fair enough. Yeah. I have a question though about the COVID.
Yeah.
I texted you earlier in the week about this. The idea, remember we did a show back before the Sens were shut down, and we were questioning, okay, like, hey, NHL, exactly how many players do I have to have under the COVID protocol before you're going to let us cancel games, before we're going to take a week or two off? You know, it went from 6 to 8 to 9 to 10. Once it finally got to 10, the NHL finally shut them down. But the Islanders got to shut down at 8. I don't understand that. That's just not right.
Yeah. Well, they clearly don't have a set number. I guess they're just going on feel. I have no idea exactly what they're doing, but seems
which
odd
is wrong.
To me.
Like, why isn't there a policy? Why isn't there something in place that says, you know, when you lose this many guys, you've got this many out of the lineup, then yeah, or this many tests positive, whatever it is, it should be written in stone. And obviously it's not. And it's just wrong. Like, and I don't even know that the NHL was going to do anything until there was a lot of noise. I'm sure Eugene Melnick made a phone call to the NHL and said, hey, fellas, we need some help here. We're down 10 guys. Give us a break. Let's take a couple days off. And I think that's the only reason that they got what they that they got postponed there for those three games. And that's just, it's kind of crazy in this day and age and the situation that we're dealing with COVID, for the length of time we've been dealing with it, that it would take that long before the league stepped in and finally shut them down. And now their season's screwed.
Right. Okay, well, let's close it out right there. And
sorry,
again, I'll call people's attention to the positive we talked about here a moment ago to leave the show. Ladies and gentlemen, we remind you that our website is SensNationHockey.com. Please check that out. Lots of cool articles there. A couple of new ones up. I'm talking about Matt Murray. Pat McGuire is talking about some changes the Sens need to make now. And five moves, in fact. So check that out, SensNationHockey.com. Greg, enjoy your day. You're at the rink right now. What's going on?
It's positive. It's above zero, Stevie. It's always like 2 or 3 degrees in here today.
Nice.
It was minus 20 last week, so we're looking forward to a good day. Actually, the boys are gonna we're looking into putting an outdoor rink out at the family out at the team house.
Cool.
The big mansion. Yeah, we're gonna build an outdoor rink.
And plus two, you can work on your tan.
Huh? Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll get right on that.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Enjoy your day, and we'll see you next time on the Sens Nation Hockey Podcast.
Thanks for being with us on the Jim K. Ford Sens Nation Podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and review. Share the show with your friends and followers, or become a member on Patreon. Check out our website today at SensNationHockey.com.